Davis Finney has joined us in the studio for this hour of Sports Byline. Davis, of course, the former professional road bicycle racer, was known as a fast sprinter, and he won the most races in American history. He's a U.S. National Road Race Champion and a 1984 Olympic bronze medal winner, and he became the first American to win a stage at the Tour de France, riding for the 7-Eleven team, and he is one of three Americans to have won multiple stages of the Tour de France. And also in 2000, he had to face a challenge. He was diagnosed with early onset Parkinson's disease, and he talks about it all in the book, The Happiness of Pursuit, A Father's Courage, A Son's Love, and Life's Steepest Climb. You know, Davis, when I think about, and having spent a little bit of time with you before you walked into the studio, when I think about what you have faced both in an athletic standpoint and now on a personal level, I think about the strength that it must have taken for you to do both of these things. Am I correct in that observation?
Well, that's definitely what I talk about in the book, which is that the strength to get through a race like the Tour de France, 3 weeks, thousands of miles of bike racing over all types of terrain, through hot and cold weather and whatnot, that strength has led me to be able to battle my current disease, Parkinson's, much better, I think, than I would have, and I try to share that message. But it's not about winning per se, as much as it's about enduring and finding little victories along the way.
Let's talk a little bit about where you grew up in Boulder, Colorado. Tell me a little bit about being a kid in Boulder, Colorado.
Now, Boulder's an exceptional town. I mean, I grew up watching the CU Buffaloes and, end zone seats for a buck if you were a kid, and playing on campus. And, I would say it was a fairly halcyon existence growing up in Boulder. Of course, Boulder was very liberal, and then in my junior high years, we ended up having some riots because of President Nixon's decisions and the war and whatnot. But that didn't affect me so much. What really affected me was the popularity of endurance sports like running and then cycling. And Boulder was where I saw my first bike race, and that just was captivating beyond belief.
What was it that hooked you on it?
I think it was just the speed and the color and the inner race dialogue that you would hear smatterings of as the riders rushed by. But it had its own music, and it was its own symphony, this pack of riders flying along tightly bunched together, and I was completely enthralled. And I had been a stick and ball sports kind of a guy, but I wasn't really big enough to pursue that at a high level once I got to high school. So this was the right sport at the right time, and I got on my bike after seeing what was then called the Red Zinger Bicycle Race, at the time the biggest race in the country, and rode my bike home and announced to my parents, I'm going to be a bike racer, and was met with deafening silence.
I always love to talk to the NASCAR drivers, and I'm going to ask you a question that I put to them. Not what your first car was, but what was your first racing bike?
My first racing bike I bought used from a friend of mine, which it was an Italian bike called a Masi, M-A-S-I. And I loved that bike dearly. I rode it into the ground to the point where it had been repaired several times. And I was out here actually training in outside of Berkeley. My future wife was graduating from Cal Berkeley, and I'm out there riding on by Marinda, and I hear this tube cracking in half like a soda can getting pulled apart. So I did what any sensible guy would do. I stopped and bought a roll of duct tape and taped the bike back together and got home on it.
What was the first competitive race?
First race was, I actually won my first race, and it was a little circuit race outside of Denver, or actually in downtown Denver in Larimer Square, and I was a junior rider, so there weren't that many juniors in the mid-70s, and bike racing in general in the mid-70s was very much like breaking away, and so I'm in this pack, and I'm maintaining position, and I'm figuring out how to go fast through the curves and not get bumped back and pushed around. And I come out of the final turn fighting for the lead, and I just kicked it, and I ended up winning. And I couldn't believe it, neither could my father.
What was the support for a racer back then like as compared to today? Because everybody hears about the big team and the big money and everything. But what was it like for you as an individual racer?
Well, you know, it's like any pro sport that's evolved. And I was well supported once I got up to the, I would say, the Olympic level. And then back in those days, to race in the Olympics, you had to be an amateur. You had to retain your amateur status. So it wasn't like we made a fortune, but we were well supported by the 7-Eleven Corporation. And we took that support, turned it pro after the 84 Olympics, and were the first U.S. pro cycling team to race in the Tour de France. But even the Tour then was much different. Now everyone has big team buses, stays in the best hotels, and, you know, flies all around the world, business class, etc. But we were a little bit less than that. And the Tour in those days, in the 80s, middle 80s, was less than that. In fact, there was a couple nights during that Tour de France where we stayed in school gymnasiums. So I can't imagine, you know, Lance Armstrong staying in a school gymnasium.
Tour de France stage winner and also a professional cyclist and bronze medal winner with the Olympics. Davis Finney is with us in the studio. We're going to be talking a little later on about his book, or a little more about his book, The Happiness of Pursuit. When you take a look at the way the sport has grown, what is it that really moved it along? What is it that took it to the level that it is today, Davis?
Well, I think it was a combination of having the right characters winning the races, which, you know, initially in my era was Greg LeMond, certainly, and that being documented by network TV here in America. And so it was media-generated and personality-generated. And, you know, it's interesting, Ron, because my son has grown up in this era where every single thing he does is chronicled and known worldwide within minutes of what he's done, whether it's a good race or a bad race. You know, I follow him via Twitter and whatnot. And that has changed the sport dramatically, because now it's not just about watching the Tour de France on television here in this country. You can follow any race anywhere in the world if you want, if you find the right hash mark for it.
You also said something before we came in the studio that I thought was very insightful on your part, that really what has changed in cycling is that it's gone from the equipment, the bike, to more onto the personality of the people that are riding those bikes.
Right. Well, you know, way back in the turn of the century, when the sport was in its nascent state, these races like the Tour de France were fantastically difficult, because the schedule for the Tour was 8 or 10 days where you'd ride 300 or 400 kilometers, or, you know, 200 some miles a day, with over these horrendous roads with fixed gear bicycles, and be responsible for getting there no matter how you could get there. But it was really a test of the bike as much as anything. Well, as equipment evolved, then it became more of a personality-driven sport. And after World War II, the sport especially retained its popularity in Europe. But it's always just been such a difficult sport. And, you know, now, of course, it's a global sport. But with people like Lance have just done tremendous things to popularize the sport.
Where did the crossover come? At one particular point, do you think that happened?
I would have to say probably in the middle 70s in Europe, where there was one dominant racer, the greatest racer of all time, Belgian rider named Eddy Merckx, who won, you know, 5 Tour de France's, 5 Tours of Italy, 3 World Championships, you know, plus every major race multiple times in his career. And so that was where the sport started to take off. But in this country, I'd have to say it was when Greg LeMond won his first tour in 86, and that was chronicled by I believe, CBS every weekend, and, you know, John Tesh music and voice and David Michaels producing. And those shows are still terrific TV.
We'll talk a little bit about where the state of the sport is today when we come back on the other side. Davis Finney is with us in the studio, and we're going to be talking about his book, The Happiness of Pursuit. We do that as we continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on America's sports talk show, Sports Byline.